It's time for Peter Greenberg Worldwide with America's number one travel news journalist. And now, the man who travels over 400,000 miles each year, your travel detective, Peter Greenberg.
Hi, everybody. Peter Greenberg here, and welcome to the podcast that's done from a different location around the world every single week. One day Canada, the next day Thailand, then New York, London. You just never know. This week, we come to you from the Port of Monaco in the Principality. That's right. Right next to me is the brand new Seven Seas Explorer from Regent. And if you hear noise and wind, that's because we're literally outside on the port. And all that noise is as the ship is getting ready to sail on its official inaugural cruise. Joining me now, someone who just got off a shakedown cruise, if you will, James Schillinglaw, the editor-at-large at Travel Market Report. You and I have talked about a lot of cruise ships. What about this one? Because it's billed, I mean, it's their brand, right? The most luxurious cruise ship ever built.
Yeah, somewhat a little bit, you would think, of a stretch. But I have to tell you, I think they've done it, at least built what is now the most luxurious ship ever. And that has to do with the materials and the attention to detail that they have. I have not seen anything finer.
Give me an example.
Well, you start with the luxury suite, which is their Regent suite.
I'm going to talk about that a little bit later in the show. That goes, guys, I'm not making this up, $10,000 a night.
$10,000 a night. And
is that per person?
And he's actually threatening, Frank Del Rio, the president of Regent and Oceania, is threatening to raise that price. So he's got enough demand.
Well, we're talking to him a little later, so I'm going to have to ask him that question. But that's a lot of money to spend. But you know what? They sold it, didn't they?
They sold it. And you start with that. But in fact, you know, we have real Picassos and Chagalls throughout the ship.
You mean it's not Murray Picasso and Stephen Chagall?
I think it was Peter Greenberg. I saw a painting there with Peter Greenberg.
The early work, the Blue Years.
Blue Years.
No, but the point is they've really done the artwork, too.
They've got the artwork, and it's amazing. And Frank Del Rio, you can talk to him about that, because he hung 90% of it and selected 90% of it. He is really the force behind this ship. And I think if you go not just the suite, but the attention to detail, the marble, I mean, you will get, when you get on, Peter, you will see marble that you have not ever seen on a cruise ship.
There's also the halo effect. You know, when Etihad came out with their, you know, first class residence, which is a 3-room suite on the A380, you know, they were pricing it at about $10,000 a ticket, and they sold a lot of them, but they weren't really intending on selling all of them on every flight, simply because they just wanted the halo effect. The idea that you were on a ship that had that kind of a suite was almost a reason to go.
Well, and that's true. And in fact, all of the suites below that are quite something. I mean, they really, my suite, which was, you know, probably a standard suite, was just over the top. I mean, the amount
What defines over the top?
Over the top is when you go into the bathroom, everything is marble. Everything is attention to detail. There's gold leaf. There's all kinds of things. When you look at the balcony, it's a full balcony that's much wider and bigger than anything I've seen.
You know, I noticed that. Most balconies, everybody says they want a balcony on a cruise ship, and you know, you have to go out. It's not even big enough to change your mind out there.
Yeah, I never go on balconies to be, you know, I mean, who goes on balconies? We're out on the ship.
Although, when you see the size of this balcony, you want to go out there and hang.
You do, because you have a full deck chair and two chairs and a table, and it was amazing. And then the bed is very comfortable. It's not quite the $190,000 bed in the Regent suite, but...
Wait, say that again?
The bed in the Regent suite is $190,000.
What's in it? People?
Well, I did lie on it, even though we're not supposed to, but I did go on it for a second, and it was very comfortable.
But you lay down on this on the bed.
I did.
Okay, now the bed's worth $142,000.
The beds on everywhere in this ship are amazing. Really, the attention to detail. So art, design, materials, and, of course, food. And the food is exquisite. And they have two new restaurants. Pacific Rim is their new Asian restaurant. And Chartreuse, which I think is the best restaurant on the ship, is a great French restaurant that's absolutely really amazing.
Did you sample all the restaurants?
The only one I did not sample is the Sette Mari, which is the Italian restaurant that's up in the veranda, which is the sort of buffet area. Buffet area is actually not a good way to describe it, because it's all white tablecloth, whatever time of day. And it's not quite buffet, but in one section they have their Italian restaurant. That's the only one I didn't sample.
Now, when you talk about the idea that, you know, right now there are 56 new cruise ships being built around the world, every shipyard's working at 100% capacity. Here's the newest one. This was built in Italy, in Fincantieri.
Yeah.
The bottom line is, can anybody come out now with a better one?
You know, I'm sure there's always going to be, you know, can you do one better? I have a feeling that this kind of price, I mean, the list price was $450 million. I think it's closer to $500 million when they got out of there. They're doing another one for 2021, a twin. And then what you're having an explosion of these ships in the luxury segments in particular. I mean, we have like three or four more ships to go in the next year that are, and next couple of years that are going to be, you know, can you top this? And we're going to have to see if they can. I wish that I could fly
into the sky. The charge for looking at this pamphlet is $3. The charge for looking at this pamphlet and putting it back quickly is $4. Over the seas and all the degrees to anywhere I please.
Oh, I want to get away. I want to fly away. Yeah. My next guest knows a little bit about the ship we're about to get on because he's the CEO and president of Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings. His name is Frank Del Rio. Explain the word holdings, Frank.
Well, it's the company that operates three incredible brands, Norwegian Cruise Line.
As opposed to three terrible brands?
yes.
Okay.
So Norwegian Cruise Line is our contemporary brand. Oceania Cruises is our premium segment. And behind us is the Regent Seven Seas Explorer, the most luxurious cruise ship ever built that we just launched on behalf of Regent Seven Seas Cruises.
You see, now I knew you were going to say that because it's part of your branding, right? But now I'm going to call you on that. What makes it? I mean, it's one thing to say it. What makes it the most luxurious?
Peter, you've been on board.
Yeah.
And I would throw the question back at you, what doesn't make it? Every step you take on that vessel exudes luxury. 56,000 gross registered tons for just 750 guests is an enormous amount of space.
And you've kept it small in terms of passenger numbers.
Yes.
Yes.
So this is a luxury vessel. It has to have a certain aura of exclusivity. And all our Regent Seven Seas ships are, by definition, small. By today's standards, Regent Explorer is the largest at 750 guests.
But for you, that's large.
For Regent, it is large. For the Norwegian Cruises brand, 750 would be half of a lifeboat because we have ships that are 4,200 guests.
Your lifeboats hold that many people?
On Norwegian, they do.
But, you know, I was talking to one of the designers earlier in the show about your allocation of space. Because when you design a ship, space is so critical.
It is.
How did you get, I mean, I know you were very hands-on on this, so when you looked at the original plans, what did you look at and say, no, that's not going to work, this is what I want?
You know, it's the details, it's what people look at first, it's part of our what the, our society has come to treasure, and that's bathrooms.
If you, don't see, I judge a hotel by the bathroom.
Absolutely.
Because if the you spend more waking hours in your bathroom than any other time, any other space on the ship, so if the bathroom works, chances are the rest of the hotel works or the rest of the ship works.
So you might think I'm kidding, but we built it from the bathroom and the closet. 2.5 years ago, we had a 10-person focus group of all our past guests in Miami where we built six.
You locked them in a bathroom, didn't you?
No, this was just the closets.
Really?
Six mock-up closets. That's where they get you. It's the little details. The closets have got to be right. No, these are longer cruises, Peter. These are not 2- and 3-night cruises. People go on these vessels for 10, 12, 14 nights,
Let me give you two words that might come to mind. Steamer trunks.
Well, those are a little outdated.
You know what I'm
days.
Talking about.
Yeah.
They're coming in with big bags.
They do come with big bags. Yeah. And these are well-to-do folks. They dress to the nines. And so you've got to have the space for them to be able to store their...
But that was a surprise for you, right? They came back and they said, no, we're not happy with the closets, right?
Yeah, that's right. We made lots of modifications to closet. How high, how deep to make the drawers, how many drawers, how much hanging space.
You know, I got to tell you something. I took the last cruise of the Rotterdam before Holland America sold it. And I took a look at the walk-in closet in the stateroom you put me in. That was the size of my cabin on the Rotterdam.
Well, you know, you get what you pay for,
Thanks,
Peter.
Frank.
And this vessel being the most luxurious cruise ship in the world.
You're not going to stop with that, are you?
No, that's your readers or your listeners are going to remember that line if I have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
But it's true. Space is a premium. If I had to define the word luxury, and as you and I know, it's a very difficult word to define depending what product or service you are talking about, on cruise ships, space is literally money.
Yeah.
Because the ship costs, the volume costs money to build, and what tends to happen is you try to pack as many passenger cabin, as many people on board as possible.
Because you got to amortize the cost.
You have to amortize the cost over a broader group of guests. Not on board our vessels. I mean, this is not the kind of ship that you save all year long to be able to afford. If I can be a little brash, I would tell you this is the ship for the one percenters. Yeah. This is the ship for those who have achieved a level of success, a level of wealth, because with luxury comes the way, the means of being able to pay for it.
All right, so that brings up another question, and that is the nickel and diming aspect of some operations, right?
Yeah.
I know that once you get above a certain level of luxury, people don't want to go to their wallet at all. They just want to say, "What?" You know, it's like the Seaborne approach or Silver
Who?
Sea.
I'm sorry?
You heard me.
It was a misconnection.
I know, sorry. But you know what I'm saying, where you pay the price, and it's all, it truly is all-inclusive.
Well, I beg to differ there, because by far, Regent is the most all-inclusive cruise line.
No,
if you compare lists,
yeah, yeah.
The only time you have to go for your wallet on board any of the Regent ships.
Spa,
the boutique,
right,
and to cover your gambling losses, because you will lose. everything else is paid
for. I hope
for.
My cameraman is listening, because that's all he wants to do is go to the casino. I'm trying to warn him against it. Okay.
You know, the specialty restaurants, all your beverages.
Shore excursions.
Excursions are included. Your pre-cruise hotel. We want you to fly in the day before. We want you to rest. We want you
to decompress. I wish more people would know that just from the logistics of it all.
Yeah.
People who try to fly on the same day the cruise is leaving, they're gambling.
Not only that, but, you know, if you spend a day at a hotel, we want you to take the edge that you build up during that long transatlantic flight on the hotels. Take it out on them. So when you come on board the next day, you're nice and relaxed, and we greet you with a glass of chilled champagne, and you're off to the races.
We're dealing in a situation right now where every shipyard that I can imagine is operating at 100% capacity.
Yeah.
There are more cruise ships being built now for you and everybody else than ever before in my history, right? I'm sure yours as well.
Correct.
Where are we going?
Well, we're going where consumers want to take us. This has always been an industry where you build them and they will come. And in the last 30, 40 years where this industry has really taken off, it hasn't disappointed. And, of course, now we have China. And it's 1.3 billion consumers.
130 million people traveling.
Traveled to a foreign destination last year. Very, very few have yet to try a cruise. And so the cruise industry, in essence, is betting big on the China cruise expansion.
Including you.
Including I.
Where are you putting your ships there?
The Norwegian Joy, a ship that we're building as we speak in Germany, will be the...
It's being built directly for that market.
It's specifically for that market. We have customized it to the hilt. We've spent the year learning about not Chinese culture, because that's the easy part. You can read a book and learn about Chinese culture. It's Chinese nuances that is even more important.
Right.
And we've...
Certain floor numbers are eliminated.
Well, that's... yes. But there's lots and lots and lots of layers. And if you really want to gain their hearts... we think that's the way to do it. We don't think there's a product like that in the Chinese market today. The products in the Chinese market today are existing vessels and somewhat converted to local taste as best as they could. But we started from a blank sheet of paper, and I think that the results will be fantastic. The response we're getting from the Chinese travel agency community is just beyond our expectations.
If I had to guess, I would say the ship that you're building right now, the Joy, would have increased retail space?
Yes, 60% more.
Casino?
60% more.
Smoking?
Come on. Yeah, a lot more. But also, you know, in the States, we talk about multi-generational travel.
Right.
And it's a sliver of our overall demand. In China, we see it as a core market. You know, in China for many, many...
Because families like to travel together.
For many, many years, until recently, there was the one-child rule. And so it's not unusual to have that one child with their parents and two groups of grandparents. So six adults and one kid. And you've got to have special accommodations to treat some combination of that kind of passage. And, of course, the restaurants and the entertainment and everything has to be geared for that kind of multi-generational clientele.
If you are sitting next to a small child or someone who is acting like a small child, please do us all a favor and put on your mask first.
Speaking with Frank Del Rio, the CEO and president of Norwegian Cruise Line Holdings.
Good.
I got it right now, Frank? Come on.
And the second take, he got it right.
Story of my life. When you're building ships for the Chinese market, you talk about nuance, right? What was the one thing that surprised you the most about what they didn't want versus what you thought they did want?
You know, cuisine has always been a big part of the cruising world.
And by the way, in the old days of the cruise lines, the best food on the ship was the Chinese laundry had their own kitchen.
That's right, the crew food,
right, it was the best,
But cuisine has always been a big part of cruising, the cruising experience.
Right.
And in the Western world, cuisine or the menus, the cuisine, the whole experience is a little bit more formal.
Right.
Right? The waiter sits you down and brings you these beautiful menus, and you wait for the bread basket, and they pour the water, and then they bring you the menu, and the whole thing takes maybe half an hour before you even start thinking about what you're going to order.
Right.
Not in the Chinese. It's sit down. I want every single dish that I'm going to order on the table at the same time, including dessert, everything. The whole thing from start to finish is 30 minutes max.
So you have to change your entire service approach.
You have to. You better build galleys. If you're going to serve good food, good a la minute food, and you have that kind of demand and time, you have to build galleys that are twice as big and manned by twice as many cooks and chefs and sous chefs than you would in an ordinary ship. And so that was one of the things that caused us to say, wow, this is a different ballgame.
And yet, when you think about it, the Chinese are the most huge consumers of premium wines.
That's correct, yeah. So you can down wine just as fast as you can a beer, I guess.
Here you have the Seven Seas Explorer. You're building a sister ship to this.
Explorer number 2. That won't be her proper name, but that's sort of the working name right now.
At the yard, yes. And any plans on taking that one to China? Gene Sloan wanted me to ask you that question from USA Today.
Yeah, I've been asked that question quite a bit. I believe that I see many parallels in the Chinese cruise industry of what happened in the United States and in Western Europe over the last 30, 40 years. Like any industry, any product, as it matures, it evolves, niches are created. You mentioned a minute ago that we know that today the Chinese consumer consumes more luxury goods than anybody else.
Right.
More Ferraris are sold in China than anywhere else, more Bordeaux wines, more Gucci bags, et cetera, et cetera.
More Buicks.
More Buicks, too. And so it's a matter of time before the Chinese consumer learns, picks up, graduates to a true luxury cruise experience. Because let's be honest with each other. The cruise industry today in China is not the luxury sector. It's the contemporary sector.
And shorter cruises.
And shorter cruises, yes. Right. 4 or 5 day cruises max. So I think in time, like everything else, it will evolve. And we're hopeful that by 2020, because things in China happen much faster than they do in the rest of the world, 2020 is only 4 years away. The cruise industry in China will have been maybe 10 years old, 11 years old.
But even in their infancy, when you look at the sheer numbers, if you only got 2%.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be thrilled.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
And so we don't have to yet cut steel on the Explorer 2. We don't do that until the late 17, so we have over a year. And hopefully by then we'll be able to read and gauge whether we are going to whether we're going to be sending the ship to Asia or not.
All right, now I want you to do something that I always ask everybody to do who's in your chair.
Yeah.
I want you to take off your CEO hat and put on your passenger hat, right? Not just on your cruise line, any cruise line. What's the one thing you hate about the cruise industry that you want to see change tomorrow as a passenger?
As a passenger, the changing of prices. I've always been critical of the airline industry of changing prices. You know,
there's no price integrity.
There's no price integrity. We're working very, very hard to have price integrity of my three brands. But look, the business model of the cruise industry is to sail with full ships. That's not the business model of the airlines or of the rental car agencies or of hotel industry.
Are you going to change that model?
We're changing it. I know.
How do you do that?
You focus on when demand is slack, and sometimes demand is slack for lots of reasons. They could be domestic,
seasonal.
Recession, seasonal situations around the world. Up to now, the one and only lever, if you will, that the industry had was drop prices, and at some price, all inventory clears.
Right.
We believe there's better ways of doing it, and we have been doing it that way at Oceania and Regent for years. And as you know, there was a merger in November of 2014 where Norwegian Cruise Lines bought Prestige Cruise Holdings, which was the parent company of Oceania and Regent.
Right.
And now that I'm the CEO of all three, we're really practicing the overused term of synergies, where each of the brands teaches the others what they do best. And one of the things that we've been able to bring to the Norwegian brand from the prestige side is this price integrity, where we don't, our knee-jerk reaction is not to lower prices, because lowering prices doesn't help anybody.
And you don't come back from that.
And you don't, yeah, yeah.
Or at least you don't come back from that quickly.
Quickly. It's a slippery slope.
Exactly.
Yeah. Toto, I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore.
Noise behind me, that's because we're actually on the port and the harbor at the dock looking up at the brand new Seven Seas Explorer, where they're making some shipboard announcements. But that's okay, because I got the guy who's in control of those shipboard announcements, the captain of the ship, whose name is too long for me to pronounce. Captain, give us your full name. Go ahead, I dare you.
Stanislas Mercier de la Combe.
Otherwise known as Captain Stan.
Indeed.
Okay. This is a ship, and earlier on the show we had Frank Del Rio on and a number of other people who basically said it's the most luxurious ship ever built. That's your branding. And I would expect no less than any ship telling them they're the best, right? But you're the captain. You've got to operate this ship. What about this ship do you like?
Well, it's a pleasure. First of all, it's a new ship, so you get to get all the latest technology. So it's a good beginning. Then she's fairly good with the maneuverability, good thrusters, so we can hold the ship with a very
good... You can hold position.
Yeah, hold position and fight against the element. If you got wind and current, we are in a good place, and it's just so easier on us.
So in the old days, you'd anchor out to tender in. Now you can anchor out and hold position.
Yes, though this one is not... You have to do it manually.
Yes.
But you've got a lot of power to do so.
But you can do it.
But we can do it.
Good. I'll put you to the test later on.
Thank you.
But it's the largest ship that Regent's ever done.
Yes, it is.
Right? 700 passengers?
750 passengers.
Oh, excuse me. I forgot the other 50. Okay. But it looks to me, and I'm a captain, so it looks to me like this is a ship that maneuvers well.
She's really good. It's like a new date, you know? We just went at sea since 7 days now. So as captain, you take it very gently at the beginning. And then the more you know each other, the more you can do things.
So tonight we're going to go to the prom.
Yeah, kind of. So for the moment, we just take it very gently, take some tugs if we need it, just so we can know each other. We know how she's reacting.
Know what its limitations are.
Exactly. That, you know, safety is always coming first.
On sea trials, and every ship has to go through sea trials.
Yes.
How fast did you get this thing up to?
Nearly 21 knots.
Pretty good.
So it's a good speed for a cruise ship, yeah.
What's changed in terms of your environmental footprint? What are you able to do on this ship that you couldn't do on some of the older ships? In terms of how you deal with waste, in terms of how you deal with garbage. I mean, I'm assuming that you have a zero tolerance policy that nothing goes over the ship.
No, yeah, everything is treated. We basically recycle mostly everything. We've got an advanced wastewater treatment system, so basically the waste getting out the ships are clear like a bottle of water.
And the thing is, you can't just be a captain anymore. You have to be an engineer, don't you?
I actually am an engineer. On the French Navy School, you are both deck and an engine officer. But though you don't want me to be a real engineer.
But the point is, you know how things work.
We definitely know how things work, especially having the chance to be in the shipyard for 8 months.
Yeah, you took the ship out.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
You took the ship out. You were there from the beginning of the welding to the actual floating out.
Just arriving when, I would say, the big metal boxes was finished and they started to put all the cables, cabins, and electronic inside.
When you take a look at that, I mean, I've looked at all the drawings and the plans and the books. You probably have, about 60 or 80 different manuals on this ship for everything.
You have no idea how much you have. It's like, I don't even know in terms of gigabytes now because, you know, everything is electronics.
Sure.
But I know
But
that
when in doubt, take the book out.
Definitely. But it's literally just for one topic, I've got 19 meters of shelving just for one document.
And what's the document?
It's called Safe Return to Port. So if something would ever happen, you can.
That's part of SOLAS.
It's a new regulation.
Safety
in SOLAS.
Of life at sea, right?
Exactly.
Explain how that works, because I think in the wake of the Costa Concordia, people don't realize how important that concept is.
Well, if something would have happened to the ship, you can, having definite casualty on board, you can deal with the matter and you can come back where is the closest port. So you will not be on the cruise ship stranded in the water for 4 days because you had a fire on board. You will be able to go back on your own to the next port, and basically everything is double on board.
Right, you built in redundant systems.
Exactly.
And you know, it's interesting, when the Carnival Triumph had that fire, which is what you're talking about, when they built that class of ship, they made a mistake. They actually did make a mistake. They put the generator in the same room, essentially, as the engine.
Well, that was what the industry did at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, regulation are evolving all the time, so we learn from the mistakes.
Of course. Because if you had a fire,
exactly.
If you had a fire, you shut down the engine, you're also shutting down the generator. Not anymore. That's it. And what are you doing in terms of fire safety on the ship? Because I'm a fireman myself in New York, so I know that the importance of training. Every one of your crew members is trained.
All of them. And even before coming on board, they have to attend our safety trainings.
Including you.
Including myself. We have actually to do refreshment every 5 years nowadays. And we've got just the best technical firefighting equipment on board.
You know, one of the things that people don't realize, but I think they should, is that even in the Carnival Triumph situation, they had systems on board that ship that allowed the officer on the deck to know exactly where the fire was, to isolate it on the video. They had cameras on it right away, and he knew right away what to do. There wasn't a delay in giving him information. He knew to close the watertight doors, he knew to turn off the air conditioning, and then he had to hit the button to flood the engine room. You have those kind of panels on your bridge, so you know exactly if there's a problem, where it is, and you can isolate it immediately.
Yeah, but on top of it, as I said, the technology is evolving, and now what we have is just amazing.
Wow. And of course, if you're going to be, the one thing that all the cruise ships have now is not in the cabins, of course, not in the personal areas, but in the public areas, you've got cameras everywhere, so you have eyes on stuff, meaning if there's a problem, you can spot it.
We can spot it, we record it, it's very handy for investigation if there is need to be, and it's as well a deterrent, you know, people knowing there is camera on board don't really behave properly, though I have to say with Regent, you know, we've got the best guest ever, so never had any security concern, really.
Hello? This is your captain speaking. There is absolutely no cause for alarm. Get your motor running. Head out on the highway.
Looking for adventure. As anybody knows who's ever taken a cruise or maybe even wanted to take a cruise, a lot of it has to do with the food on board. And yes, you're going to gain weight. I'm sorry. It's just going to happen. And my next guest knows a little bit about that because he's been doing and supervising all the cuisine on all the Regent ships for the last 16 years. His name is Bernard Klutz. How are you, sir?
Very good. Huh?
I mean, you're the culinary director. You are Dr. No. I mean, you know what works and what doesn't work on a ship.
Yeah, more or less. It's always you get surprises. Sometimes you feel like, oh, this dish works very well, and then you find out later on, oh, maybe it was not really the right one. And it's also the other way around.
Exactly. So I have to ask you the question. You opened the door on that. What was a dish that you thought, boy, everybody's going to love this dish, and nobody ordered it? And then what was the dish you said, who's ever going to order this, and everybody wanted it?
Yeah, there's one dish we have in Prime 7 in our signature steakhouse where we have seafood platter. And I thought everyone will order that seafood platter. It is beautiful lobster tail.
I would order that seafood platter.
King crab and shrimp and scallops. And hardly anyone is ordering
it. Well, save one for me because I'm going to order it.
Definitely. Yeah. We will have one ready for you today.
But when you have to, you know, you're sailing in so many different ports. People don't realize today cruise ships call around the world in more than 1,000 ports. So you have to think ahead, way ahead, in terms of how you source your items, where they're coming from, how much you're going to take on board, what you're going to buy in bulk that you're going to store, right? But that's a big deal.
Yeah, planning is the most important thing for a cruise vessel. We get containers from the United States or from Europe every 3 weeks.
Okay, where do you get the steaks?
The steaks there are from the United States. We get it from outside of Chicago. It's an old black Angus beef, which we have on board. The quality is unbelievable. And also most of the seafood we get from the United States. But of course...
But when you're sailing around these waters, you can also source things locally.
Yes, fresh fish, seafood, vegetables and berries, fruits, we source locally.
And of course, the biggest crew item is beer.
Yeah, I would say so, yes.
And if you're out of beer, you're going to have a mutiny on board. You better stock the beer.
Beer for the crew and wine for the guests.
How many different wines do you have on board?
Oh, we have about 120 different wines on the connoisseur wine list, plus we have about 60 wines on the complimentary wine list.
On the connoisseur wine list, I mean, that's a substantial list for any restaurant, right? But
yes.
But that's for all of your restaurants, correct?
Yes.
What's the most expensive?
It's the Petrus for about $3,000.
Anybody ordering it yet?
Not on this cruise.
And I won't be buying it.
Oh, we have sold of Petrus a lot, and also Screaming Eagle we sell a lot.
You know what? Yeah, and Screaming Eagle is expensive.
It is, yes.
Right. You know what happens? Because when you buy it, you start screaming like an eagle. It's true. Where do you actually source the most of your stuff that doesn't come on the containers? Meaning, on a cruise that we're about to do, going to Barcelona or going to Portofino or going to Livorno, what are you going to be picking up on this?
Today is the main loading when it comes to fresh produce and fish. And then along the way, like in Italy, we purchase local items if it is a nice mozzarella or cold cuts. And the same is in France. We purchase shrimp or...
So when we get to Italy, you're going to do me a favor and find the best, creamiest, stinkiest gorgonzola.
Oh, we will do that.
You can find it, right?
Yes.
Unbelievable.
And the cheese is in France and in Italy, they're just unbelievable. And you will taste them on board. We purchased already some of them yesterday. We were in Saint-Tropez, some fantastic French cheeses.
What's the most crazy demand, a culinary demand that you had from a passenger?
One time someone ordered a baked potato with ice cream.
Ugh. But you did it.
Of course we did it.
And did they eat it?
They eat it and they enjoyed it.
Let me guess, not on the menu.
It was not on the menu.
And it's never
it
going
was
on the
a
menu.
Surprise and never. No, never.
Okay, what was the most demanding order though?
The most demanding order was sometimes we have guests that want to have a full menu, if it is Indian or if it is, let's say, Thai, 10, 15 courses. So that's a. Some challenges to put it together, but we do it. We do everything possible on board our vessels.
Do you have guests who will like take a shore excursion in one of the Mediterranean ports and go fishing and catch a fish and ask you to cook it?
Yes, we do, especially in Alaska.
Really?
Yes.
Especially in Alaska?
Yeah.
If they get lucky. They better catch the salmon.
They always catch the salmon.
And by the way, if they catch the salmon, they're never going to be able to finish that whole fish. It's going to be shared with everybody.
Yeah, usually they share it at the table. They invite friends that cruise with them, and then they have a fish together.
And do you ever let me in the kitchen cooking? Do you ever let me in the galley cooking with you guys?
Yes, definitely. I will show you a few tricks how to prepare dishes, especially here in the Mediterranean. And we have a culinary center where you can do cooking classes.
So you actually, but it's hands-on. You get to do it.
Yes, hands-on cooking.
You're not just
classes.
Watching it. Somebody else is doing it.
No.
I love it.
You've been listening to Peter Greenberg Worldwide. Catch us each week as we broadcast from a new location somewhere around the world.